So in the course of the week on Tuesday, I had an opportunity to speak to Professor Yusuf Musa. We requested him to come live on the program. However, he said he could not commit because of him attending to a meeting at this moment. However, he said, I can give you some time. Today I'm available. Alhamdulillah, I had the opportunity of calling him and speaking to him. We are going to use Professor Yusuf Musa as a preamble and a prelude to our discussion this morning. And we are speaking about depression. I asked him about three questions with regards to depression. What is depression? The difference between depression and anxiety. And how widespread it is in our community. Take a listen to this clip and thereafter we'll introduce you to Sister Surya Nawab. On the line, we have got a psychiatrist who currently works jointly with the Department of Health. His name is Professor Yusuf Musa. Professor Yusuf, Jazakumullah for your time. Much appreciated. Welcome to Radio Islam International.
Jazakumullah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You and all your listeners.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Professor, we're going to use you as a preamble to our program. We are currently discussing depression and anxiety. So we thought we'll get you from the medical perspective. If you could define for us in simple terms, what is depression?
Okay. Depression is you know, in simple terms, most of us, we get sometimes we are happy and sometimes we are sad. This is a normal flow. Usually it might last for a short while, or some cases it would last longer, depending on what caused us to feel sad. For example, if we were to lose a loved one, one would probably be sad for a period of time. We call that bereavement. Now, when the sadness goes on for a long period of time, usually for more than 2 weeks, and when it is associated with other things, for example, the mood is, as you said, very low. You're feeling down. And with it, you start losing interest in things that you normally enjoy doing. For example, if you were to take a housewife, she normally would, you know, keep clean the house, take care of her children, or cook, etc. Then they start losing interest in it. They don't enjoy the things that they were normally enjoying. These things tend to... people don't want to do it anymore. And together with that, we find that there's a few other things that occur. For example, you lose your appetite, you don't feel like eating anymore. Sometimes you also eat too much. Then you find that your sleep is disturbed. You have difficulty the falling off to sleep. You wake up in the middle of the night. So you don't have a normal sleep pattern. Also, with it, you find that... you might lose weight, like I said. You don't enjoy the things that you were, for example, intimate relationships with people. You don't want to go out. You tend to isolate yourself and just sit in the house. Now, when this goes on for a period of more than 2 weeks and it starts affecting your life, it must affect your life in that you don't do the things, you don't function like you were normally. When this happens, then we say you are depressed. So that is what we term depression. Depression, and sometimes this depression can get very severe, and if it gets very severe, you start feeling like there's no point in living. You might have thoughts of maybe ending your life, or that you should, you know, that Allah Pak should take away your life. It's almost like you're sitting in a dark tunnel and you don't see anything, any light at the end of this tunnel. Everything is bleak. Occasionally you feel guilty. You feel that maybe you did something wrong and you've been punished for something that you did wrong. And all of these symptoms together results in what we call a diagnosis of depression.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as to what might cause it, you know, sometimes people ask, well, why did I get depressed? There's no clear-cut reason for it. It is obviously that sometimes it's a genetic thing. So, you know, if you have a family history of depression, you may develop depression. However, usually there's some stressor in your life, whether it's a relationship problem, might be financial, maybe you're having difficulty at work, etc. Then these things bring it on. But sometimes you find for no reason, it just comes on. But generally there's some stressor in your life and you're not coping with it, and therefore you end up in the state of depression.
Mm-hmm. And can you help us differentiate between depression and anxiety?
Okay. There's a big difference. Depression is what we call a mood. That means you feel, as I said, either sad or happy, and the mood is when you're feeling sad. And anxiety on the other side, you know, everyone has an anxiety. And anxiety is a normal phenomenon. It's there because if you're not anxious, we won't do anything. For example, I'll give you a brief take a student that has to write an exam. If he's not anxious about writing the exam, then he's not going to study and prepare for the exam. So there's a normal drive. It's what we call a normal physiology, normal something in your body that makes you want to do in order to achieve. So that's a normal phenomenon. When you're anxious, when you are anxious, you find that you might breathe a little bit faster, your hands get sweaty, your heartbeat tends to go up a little bit, you get a bit of butterflies in your stomach. But what this does is it releases chemicals in your body, which then helps you to actually move forward. But when an anxiety gets too much, then it becomes a problem. Now, for example, if that same student gets anxious about writing the exams, but gets overly anxious and unduly so, then what happens is his heart rate goes too fast, he starts breathing too quickly, he might lose consciousness, and as a result of which, can't study. So now his anxiety is overpowering him and resulting in the fact that he can't study and therefore will not achieve in what he wants to do. So this is when what we term an anxiety, as I said, when an anxiety is normal, it's fine. But when it's a problem, we call it actually in psychiatrics, we say it's an anxiety disorder because now something has gone wrong. So an anxiety is normal, but an anxiety disorder is a problem. Now this anxiety, as I explained, you know, it is, there are various forms of problems. For example, a simple thing that you can think of is maybe somebody that is scared of going into a lift. Now that's an anxiety disorder. He has a phobia for lifts. He goes into the lift and he gets into a lift, heart starts beating, he develops what we call a panic attack, heartbeat, fast breathing, hyperventilating, they may even collapse. So they fear going into a lift, so then they stay away from the lift. Now that's an anxiety which is related to something specific. Then you get an anxiety which is not related to something specific. For example, the person who worries about everything. They just worry. What we call generalized anxiety. There's nothing specific. They wake up in the morning, maybe again I'll give an example of an housewife. She wakes up in the morning, she's worried, what am I going to cook today? What is, have I got, I've got some guests coming. What are we going to do? Am I going to prepare the things correctly? Are they going to enjoy it? My son is, you know, maybe gone to work. Has he reached work safely? You know, and you worry about everything, and as a result of which you want them to phone you or checking all the time. And because of this generalized anxiety, they tend to develop headaches, the neck is stiff, and because of this constant worrying, they actually can't do any of their work. Then it becomes a problem. Then we call that a generalized anxiety disorder. So I don't know if it's clear that that's an anxiety, which is normal. It becomes a disorder when it is overwhelming, causes all these symptoms, and it affects you in your ability to function normally. So instead of doing things, you worry all the time about what you should be doing instead of actually doing it. And then that's the problem of generalized anxiety. Now there are other forms of anxiety. Some people, when they become anxious, they do certain things. Like, for example, we have these people who maybe they anxious about the fact that their hands are dirty. Then they would go and wash. And then they wash their hands, but they don't feel convinced that their hands are clean. Then they would wash again, and they'd continue washing. And then this, the form of an anxiety disorder, is what we call obsessive compulsive disorder. That means they do these compulsive acts where they've got to wash and wash and wash, or they have to clean something over and over again many times. And eventually they spend so much time cleaning that they don't do anything else. And, you know, so then we call that an obsessive compulsive disorder. And that's another form of an anxiety disorder.
How prevalent is depression in our communities today?
Depression is very common. In fact, if we just look at it in worldwide terms, depression is now becoming, you know, in a few years ago, heart disease was the most common, what we call, problem which was associated with dysfunction in the world, you know, related to mental illness and inability to work, etc. It was heart disease. But as we are going along now, depression is becoming the most common form of disability in the world. In our population, we think it is, in the Muslim population, we think it is as common. It is one of the most commonest disorders. Our only problem is people tend to think that, you know, not seek help for it. They don't talk about it, they don't seek help, so as a result of it, they live with it. And you must understand that depression is not only a problem to the person. Depression has significant effect on the family. Because if you think of it, a mother, housewife, if she's depressed, it's not only she that's affected, it is the husband, it is the children. Because a depressed mother, who's, you know, isolated, cannot be, you know, good for her children. She cannot bring them up in the way they should and not be providing them. And the children are all affected. The husband is affected. So it has severe consequences in terms of the, you know, in terms of the ability to do work. Obviously, it results in a lot of people not going to work, off sick leave, unemployment, etc. And unfortunately, not in the Muslim environment, but in other societies, it's one of the most common cause of people ending their lives, committing suicide, depression.
Professor Yusuf, Jazakumullah for your time. Much appreciated on Radio Islam International.
No problem. Jazakumullah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
SMS Maulana Habib Bobax on 07-222-18384.
Yes, that was Professor Yusuf Musa. We used him as a preamble to our discussion. We asked him to outline for us the definition of depression from a medical perspective. And then we asked him the difference between depression and anxiety. And lastly, we asked him how widespread is this phenomenon of depression. We're now going to further our discussion with Sister Surya Nawab of Islamic Care Line. Those of you who know her needs no introduction. She is the founding member of Islamic Care Line and she has over 20 years of experience in this field. So Surya Nawab, Jazakumullah for your time and welcome back to Radio Islam International. So Surya, tell us, first of all, your introductory remarks after listening to the clip above.
I think Professor Yusuf, being a psychiatrist within the community for many years, has summed up very simply for lay people like us what depression is. And it's I can identify with what he's saying because of the experiences that we've had over the past 23 years at the Care Line in terms of what we see when people come in and present themselves as being depressed. And so for me, what Professor Musa has done has given a very succinct and clear definition, because I want to emphasize that, because what we see at the office is often, I don't want to minimize what people come with the problems they come with at the office, because that's our job. That's what we're there for, to listen to people. But often when you just feel somebody, when somebody's feeling low over various reasons, and there can be many causes of depression, but when you're just feeling low for a day or two or three also, we use the term depression very loosely. We say, I'm feeling depressed today, you know? And people around you would say, she's just depressed. You know, and again, I don't want to minimize what people are feeling, but I think what Yusuf said is very important in understanding that there are specific symptoms, a group of symptoms actually, that doctors would use to see whether a person is actually experiencing those symptoms, like a checklist. And when there's a group together of symptoms combined, then they diagnose the person as depressed.
Interesting indeed. And what we'll do, inshallah, we're going to unpack some of the contents that Professor Yusuf covered, and we'll inshallah go into more detail. But let's take this caller first. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi
wa
sister Surya. Jumma Barak to all of you, Radio Islam. I think the program is very, very beautiful. And people that have a lot of problems and depression, the best thing to do is to pray 7 times Surah Fatiha, Surah Yasin, and blow on your prayer. Everything will come right and everything will be perfect again, inshallah. Depression will go away, worries will go away, and Allah Pak, inshallah. Allah Pak has a cure for everything. Pray to Allah and ask for Allah for His mercy and His forgiveness, and He will cure you with everything, inshallah. That's my dua for all of you and Radio Islam staff, all the Mulanas, all in God, and all those who are there. Allah bless them all, reward them all, especially all the Mulanas that are doing so much for Radio Islam, conveying the great deen of Islam all over the globe. Inshallah, that's my dua for you, and give you the highest, highest places in
Jannah. Ameen. Jazakumullah for that, sister. Assalamu alaikum. Wa alaikum assalam. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. So, Surya, let's look at some of the triggers. What triggers depression?
Okay. I think, again, from experiences that we see and a certain amount of scientific research, depression has many possible causes. And as I said earlier, just like there are a few symptoms, depression can also be brought on by a mixture of different factors. Sometimes what we see at the office is just general feeling of hopelessness. And it may be due to external factors like marital problems or family problems, abuse or domestic violence in the home, financial issues. Financial problems lend a lot to depression, especially today when people, families have such high expectations of their standards of living and things like that. We find that financial problems are often linked to that feeling of hopelessness. Then people sometimes feel lonely. People have legal problems. Sometimes there's retirement issues. You know, people don't have enough and they're worried that how are they going to survive, and that becomes a problem for them. And grief. You know, recently, and I can link this very closely with the recent events, and we, I'm sure our listeners will agree that, I mean, we are hearing of more and more multiple deaths in families. We are hearing more and more of deaths daily, whereas previously, once a week or so, okay, maybe the radio stations, and they play a big part because obviously they would announce, you know. But if you take it generally, there's more deaths around us now than there used to be before. And that process of grief and that process of that feeling of uncertainty also makes a lot of people feel very down, especially older people. So, as I said, there are various causes or symptoms that can lead up to depression. And then, as Dr. Prof. Musa said, family history. If somebody in a close family was depressed or had a problem with depression, then the doctor that is diagnosing the person will actually look at symptoms very closely, because then there is a correlation between family history of depression and the person that the doctor is seeing, right? And then obviously there are biochemical reasons as well. You know, they, in simple terms, they allude to it as a chemical imbalance in the brain. You know, and that leads to various forms of depression. And then medical illness. This is another thing. You know, when people are diagnosed with a terminal illness like a cancer, or people go through a stroke, then also they tend to become depressed when they can't help themselves anymore. So, and that amongst young and old people. right? Mm-hmm. And then in older people, you find, you know, the natural progression of your age, your life. People need, can be how healthy and normal and very active. And then slowly or suddenly they find that they're losing their hearing or they're losing their sight slowly. And that in older people, they don't see it as a natural progression of their aging process. They tend to become depressed about it. You know, now what will happen to me? How will I cope? Who will look after me? Things like that. And that tends to draw them down and give them that feeling of hopelessness. And some of the important things that we also see at the office is postnatal depression, where women after giving birth go into a state of depression. But now, again, I want to mention that we need to be careful in just using the term depression loosely and actually looking at a person that has been diagnosed as depressed by a professional.
Mm-hmm.
The other important trend that we're seeing recently in the last about 2 to 3 years at the office is the increase in bipolar conditions, where people are diagnosed as being bipolar. And we're finding that there are more men, at least in terms of the Islamic Care Line statistics, we find more men being diagnosed recently as bipolar than females. And a lot of people will know what bipolar is before it used to be called manic depressive, where people have this very pronounced feeling of from being normal to being euphoric to being exceptionally happy and full of life and bubbly, and then just in an instant can drop down and become totally quiet and totally depressed and totally secluded. So we see a lot of bipolar at the moment as well.
Interesting indeed. 27 minutes to the hour of 10, you are listening to Radio Islam International. We are going to go for a commercial break. When we return, inshallah, we'll continue.
Support Crescent of Hope Operation Waterwell. Millions of people are suffering daily and are in need of your help. Donate generously by contributing towards a worthy cause. Deposit directly into Crescent of Hope. Lilla account 552-800-63188. Branch code 250-737. FNB Linasia. Make that call now to Crescent of Hope Operation Waterwell. 011-854-1809. Crescent of Hope, serving humanity for the pleasure of Allah.
Experience the intensity of Al-Quds, the vibrancy of Mecca, and the serenity of Medina. Book your space on Freeway Travels, exhilarating December 3 Haram package. Prices from only 20,950 Rand per person for sharing. Contact us now to reserve your seat on this limited space offer. Freeway Travel on Monday. It's a matter of choice. Call 011-661-0111 or 082-378-790.
Wrap it, pack it, fill it, close it, store it, pour it, throw it, zip it, sip it, or just stash it. You've got it. Stash It Distributors, for all your packaging and baking requirements. Stash It Distributors, 6 Clare Road, Fordsburg, 011-492-0033.
Have you recently read the official Jamiat publication, Ar-Rashid? It is packed with global Islamic news, political perspective, valuable advice from Islamic luminaries, highlights of Islamic historical sites, and plenty more. Visit a Jamiat office in your area and get the latest copy today. Jamiat ul-Ulama, South Africa. Serving Allah by serving His creation.
Call Mulana Habib Bobat on 011-854-1548. That's 011-854-1548.
You are listening to Radio Islam International. This morning we are tackling the issue of depression because of it being Mental Health Awareness Month. Sister Suraya, coming back to the issues of things that could lead a person to depression, let's look at some of the more common ones in more details. For example, financial burdens. How does this lead to depression today?
As I mentioned, people are financially compromised because of various factors. Number one is sometimes there is a lack of employment opportunities. Okay. Secondly, there is the general downturn in world global economies, where money is not as easily available now or today as it used to be in most households. Now, again, I don't want to generalize because we know that there are people who don't have a problem with money, and then there are people who have problems with money every day. And then you get the middle sort of group where a financial burden is placed over and above their normal expenses. So they are okay, middle to lower middle income families, but then there's a stress that's put on the family, like maybe an illness or a wedding, or maybe some expense, an educational expense for children who are now going to university. So for those various reasons, you'll find especially males in the household become very concerned about how they're going to be able to get their families through this, because males, as we know, would feel responsible for the financial matters in the home. Although we know that today most families have dual incomes where both the parents, both the spouses are working, to earn a level of income where they can be stable and they can look after their families, their young children, the basic needs, food and clothing and medical care, education and so on. But when there is a stressor that enters the relationship or the family where there is a burden placed on the family, and maybe the person becomes unemployed, as I said, or maybe there's an extra expense that they need that is a necessity, like a medical expense, for example. We find that what happens with the care line is people would present, they'll call in and make an appointment and say, I'm depressed, for example. I'm just feeling very down. And when they come in and or we do the intake and they in the session and they're talking, and that's one of the interventions that really helps with people who feel that they feel this hopelessness about them, no matter what the problems are. We then identify with them what is really causing the sense of feeling low or feeling down or feeling hopeless. And that is when the financial circumstances of the family will come to light. And so we see that the male, especially the husband, takes on all the responsibilities in the home of being the breadwinner and being the provider. And we know that Allah is the supreme provider. And as the sister said earlier, we need to pray and we need to make dua constantly to Allah Ta'ala. But then we need to look at the realities of the situation and the practicalities of what this family is going through or this man is going through.
How long does this situation last, the financial burden? Is it just a temporary thing or is it something that lingers around for a long period?
It depends a lot on what the stressor, the financial stressor is. Number one, if there's a way in which the person can get out. For example, if a person is in debt, if a person can get out of the debt, and those avenues are explored during counseling to say, where can you try and get help? Where can you try and maybe generate an income for yourself? What are your strengths? What can you use to be able to generate an income for yourself so you can reduce that financial burden? So I think the time is very specific to the cases that present.
And what about future insecurities? Many people are well off at the moment. They are stable, but they've got this constant insecurity that what will happen to me tomorrow? And as a result, they become very isolated in their own life. What happens?
Absolutely. That is a very real situation in our world today, especially where people feel exactly like you're saying, that future insecurity. You know, and that is very much like they're sometimes termed to be the worried well. You know, people who are very well, who are stable, who have everything, but they're the worried well. They worry about what is going to happen in the future. Now, we can have a very, very faith-based, religiously based perspective to this and say, but your rosy is in the hands of Allah, so doesn't matter how you stress now, Allah is always going to give you what is due to you, what He thinks is best for you, right? That's one way we can look at it. However, we know that there's a hadith of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam who said, tie your camel. Right? And for me, that is very important in today's world where, yes, the person will have enough faith in Allah to help him through in the future. But at the same time, right now, what can he do to try and secure whatever he can? So then they would look at Sharia compliant investments and things like that. And that to some degree would try and reduce the level of anxiety and hopelessness that a person may feel.
011-854-1548. That's 011-854-1548. Alternatively, you could SMS on 48855 or 072-786-1548. There's a message coming through. It reads, let me just quickly open here. Please explore challenges on families dealing with an anxiety and depression in spouse or parent. My spouse has anxiety and depression. It broke our marriage, which we are rebuilding. It caused a form of depression in myself, not clinical, more traumatic. Diagnosis and medication should stop being stigmatized. That's one of the messages coming through.
I think that's very important, especially the destigmatization of depression in our communities. You know, again, from my experience, as limited as it may be, there's a spectrum. On the one hand, you'll find people, as I said earlier, just because they feel a bit hopeless and a bit down and a bit out of sync for 1 or 2 or 3 days, diagnose themselves or their loved one and say, she's depressed or I'm depressed, right? On the other hand, we find people who are really slipping into, as Prof. Musa said, like a more than 2 week cycle of being isolated, and if you look at it, all the symptoms, and they're slipping away, and people around them can see it, but they observe it, but they don't pay enough attention to it. You know? And that, for me, is the other end of being very negligent, and part of the reason we do that is the stigmatization around a person who is depressed. And I think what we need to do is we need to change our thinking and say that depression is an illness like any other illness. The difference is that there isn't a blood test specifically that will diagnose depression like it does, for example, diabetes or high cholesterol or something like that. You know, the normal lifestyle diseases, right? But there are symptoms, and as Prof. Musa said, there are a few symptoms that would go together. And he also mentioned how it affects families. And the sister who sent the message in is really saying exactly what Professor Musa said, that it's not only the person who is depressed that is affected. Normally, in the social services profession, we say that things like substance abuse, things like domestic violence, things like depression, mental illness and challenges affect between 1 and 16 people in the family around the person who is the actual patient or client. Okay, so it would be the family, obviously the spouse and the children, the immediate family, and then the extended families like grandparents and in-laws and sisters, siblings and so on. So we can understand what the person who sent the message in is talking about. And I think in terms of helping people, and how we can help our loved ones if they are diagnosed as depressed or if they're feeling the symptoms that we spoke about, I think is very important. Molana, can I just go through some of the things that we can do as family members or carers to help people around us who are slipping into their depression or are depressed?
By all means.
Okay, I think what we must look at
can I ask you to just hold in for a second? We'll just take a quick commercial break and then inshallah we'll continue with that.
Okay.
All right.
قابل
You are listening to the social program on Radio Islam International. This morning we are tackling the issue of depression, and we've discovered or we've learned a lot about the triggers that leads people into depression. We spoke about financial triggers, we spoke about marital triggers, we spoke about postnatal depression, etc. So Surya, coming back to the issue of marriage, I think it's a very common one in today's day and age. Perhaps I'd like to comment on the marriage one, number one, and also on number two, before you go into the solutions, the low self-esteem one. Those two, I think, are very common.
Gee, absolutely. As I said, again, clients will present with a problem and say, we have a marital problem. Okay, and we'd make do the necessary intakes, and they come in and through counseling, and I like to refer to counseling as helping through talking, because that's what counseling is. It's helping people through the talking process while they talk, right, about their issues. And I think in terms of depression, it's an extremely important avenue to pursue, because we know that a depressed person would be isolating himself or herself, would be quiet, would not engage very positively or productively with other people and things like that. And the counseling process actually encourages them to talk. Mm. And that is when they come in and we go through the counseling process, and then we can pick up some of the symptoms that we have in terms of the depression checklist that we get clients to fill in. And they realize that the marital problem has impacted so gravely or severely on themselves as people that they've actually become depressed because of that.
Mm.
So that link between marital discord and depression is a very real one. And by no means should it just be ignored. You know, often I have this thing that we hear people, we hear what they're saying, but do we really listen to what the message is? To listen to what they're saying, there's a big difference in just hearing,
yes,
what is happening around you, but listening to what the person is saying. And that is very important in marriages. Marriage communication in marriage and marital relationships and family relationships as well, and even our relationships with our children. When people are not listened to, when the message they're trying to get across is not taken heed of, then people, you go into a process where the communication is hindered. And when that happens, obviously there are marital problems, and then slowly the person will resign themselves to them. Maybe they tried various things, you know, to make the spouse talk or to make the spouse change in a way that would be beneficial to the marriage, and it doesn't work. And the person just resigns themselves to the fact that, you know what, this is not going to work for me anymore, or this doesn't work, or I can't do it, or I am at fault.
Mm.
And they start blaming themselves, and then they become that secluded, self-centered person that doesn't want to find an interest in their normal lives, that doesn't want to find pleasure in the things, like Professor Musa was saying, find pleasure in some of the things that they were normally doing, you know. And then that feeling of hopelessness and the low self-esteem definitely comes in with that, because you start badgering yourself and you start saying, what have I done wrong? Or maybe I'm not the right person. Or maybe, and this is very, very prevalent in marriages, and we see a lot of this in the past 23 years, and that trend hasn't changed, unfortunately, at the care line in terms of the cases we see. And that is the high level of, unfortunately, infidelity and premarital relationships and infidelity in marriage. And then now it's becoming more and more positive in a sense, that people are taking on second wives. And then you'll find the first wife getting into a depression and feeling this low self-esteem. There isn't a place I can actually allude to in terms of that very low feeling of inadequacy in that situation, where she just blames herself to a large extent and feels, I'm just not good enough. And that draws her into a very, very low state mentally. You know, again, we must be careful. If it's lasting for more than 2 weeks and it has the other symptoms around it, the feelings of hopelessness and the guilt, as I was talking about worthlessness, you know. And the changes in eating habits. Also, what is very important is insomnia.
Mm.
People who are in bad marriages, have low self-esteem, often have insomnia or even hyper-insomnia.
Mm-hmm. So there are a few messages coming through. Let's take on some of them. This one reads, Assalamu alaikum. Please explain what leads to postnatal depression, because today most couples prepare for the babies. So what is the cause of postnatal depression?
Okay. It's significant that the person said most couples prepare for marriage, for babies.
Mm.
And that is precisely one of the problems when you're over-prepared.
Mm.
When you're over-prepared and your expectations are way above what is actually the case. You know, when you have a heightened sense of expectation about what is going to happen, how the baby is going to look like, what the baby is going to be, a boy or a girl, what the clinic situation is going to be like, you know, whether they're going to have a private room or a general ward, things like that, is a hypersensitized feeling of you in your mind. So your expectations are running away with you to some extent.
Mm.
But just coming more directly to the question, postnatal depression is sometimes referred to as baby blues. You know, that feeling of sadness and irritability and the fear of not being able to cope with a baby. You know, so as much as you prepare physically, as I said, about the clinic and the doctor and the sisters and the best baby layout you can get and the best, most highly technologically advanced bottle or dummy or whatever, you know, because today those get, it's an industry on its own, I think the baby industry, right?
Mm.
And advertising for it is so robust that people get caught up in all that. So you prepare, yes, you prepare, young couples prepare a lot more than we used to for an impending birth. But then psychologically, you have all these feelings, but because you feel that you should be ready, you should know what to do as a parent, your expectations of yourself in coping are so high that you don't realize that these are sometimes normal, you know, feeling not able to cope. That is why in our cultural social circles, the extended family relationships are so important, because you'll always have mom there or mom-in-law there, or older siblings or sister-in-laws who've been through it and who are there. And we still do this confinement thing, which is getting less and less, but it's a pity, because this baby blues thing can really be helped and reduced when we use the confinement after the baby as an important part of your recovery.
Mm.
So I think, you know what, there's this new gain in the family, but then also people, young couples, if both of them are working, then she's concerned about her career, or maybe she's having an impending promotion or something and she can't leave work, or is she going to leave work, or is she going to be a stay-at-home mom and look after her baby, who's going to take care of the baby, all those things lead on to the baby blues syndrome, as it is normally called. And it is usually very short-lived. It normally starts a few days after the birth, and typically it starts easing off by maybe the second or the third week or so. And the best form of help for this is to get support from family and friends, and the opportunity to be told that you can manage this, we'll help you now, we'll teach you now, you can manage this, you know, and also resting. Resting after a baby is also very important, because rest, you know, your own body has been through a trauma in a sense. You've got this new person in your life to adjust to and to look after, and it can be tiring, because sometimes people, women go through lose a lot of blood during the birthing process and things like that, so they do become a bit weak in that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to be resting, and as I said, the extended family, I think, helps a lot in doing that. So that's the one form of postnatal depression, which is normally called baby blues. And then the postpartum depression, which is a diagnosed condition. Okay? Scientifically, or research shows that it affects about between 15% and 20% of new mothers. Okay? It is an extension of the baby blues feeling. that doesn't go away. You know, it stays there to the point where the new mom would refuse to actually look at her baby or take her baby, carry her baby, feed her baby, you know. That's when it becomes an extreme. Then it's not just baby blues. It actually then becomes diagnosed as postpartum depression.
Carry on?
Is that okay?
You've got 2 minutes left. Okay. We'll most probably have to take this program into the next program, inshallah, it is next week.
Okay.
And then try and do justice to it, because I see a lot of people, alhamdulillah, are appreciating the fact that we have covered it from the start, and we are taking it into gradual process, mashallah.
Okay, so maybe then we should go on next week. If you want to take another...
Yes, we can discuss one more point if you would like.
Inshallah,
it is 3 minutes left.
I know this postpartum depression thing is unfinished, but we can talk more about it next week.
Inshallah. Maybe we can touch on something else very quickly. You've got 3 minutes left, Sister Surya.
You want to take another caller, Molana?
No, the caller is gone, unfortunately.
Okay. Can I just go through maybe some of the interventions that generally a place like the Islamic Care Line would consider? Some of the interventions would be obviously helping the individuals themselves and their family members to cope with what is going through in terms of their mental health challenges. And as I said, helping through talking is our field of expertise. And counseling, as I mentioned, can be really beneficial because it makes people feel listened to and cared for. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people who are depressed lack that feeling of being listened to, being loved, being cared for. Right. Then we also offer support groups. We have a depression checklist, which works very well. And maybe next week I'll go through it. I don't want to rush through it now because we're going to lose the impact of it. I'll go through it properly next week so people can start identifying things. And then we also have what is called ecometric assessments, where we do a scale of your stress levels. Or we do a scale of what we call a personal multifunctioning inventory. Your mind, your brain, and what is happening emotionally to you, your relationships with people, your own self, your feelings of helplessness, hopelessness, hopefulness as well, positive and negative. And it's a measure of how balanced you are, you know. It's a very effective way of actually finding out where you at in terms of your mental well-being. And then, obviously, none of us know everything about everything, or none of us are experts in everything. So when we help people through 5 or 6 sessions, through their depression, through the counseling, whatever that their problem presents with, and we realize that this is much more, or the ecometric assessment comes up and says this is much more than just this is a chronic depression, or this is bipolar, or this is postpartum depression, not just baby blues, just to give a few examples, then we have a comprehensive referral list where we would refer to specialists in the field.
Unfortunately, our time has expired. We are, inshallah, going to further this discussion next week.
Yes.
People who would like to get in touch with Sister Surya, they can contact the Islamic Care Line on 011-373-8080. I hope I'm right on that.
Yes, that is right. But also, the Care Line is not just made up of one person. We have social workers and auxiliary workers and trained counselors there as well. So if people need to, they can call 373-8080, and they can speak to a counselor there who can do an intake of their call, and then we can
In the next coming program, inshallah, we'll discuss solutions and how to overcome depression itself. We have to go through the processes so that we get a better understanding of the entire discussion related to depression. Sister Surya, jazakumullah for your time. Much appreciated. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
It brings us to the end of today's program. It's 10 o'clock on the dot.